Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
Is it me or the weekend's just never long enough? Jacksonville. Welcome in. It is a Monday edition of Jaguars Today, a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. John Osher is here. He's wandering around the building somewhere. He walked in a few moments ago, but he'll be back with me here in just a moment. Man, the weekends just are never long enough. It's a case of the Mondays, except right here on Jaguars Today. We got 2 hours of Jaguars and NFL talk coming for you today. We'll talk about the fan feedback spotlight here in just a couple minutes. Want to set up some of the things we're going to be talking about on today's show, though. We are asking you on the fan feedback spotlight today, with the draft now about 4 weeks away, generally speaking, about 4 weeks away. We want to know what you believe is the biggest need for this Jacksonville Jaguars team. What is the biggest need for this team? And that can be, that doesn't necessarily mean what do you think the Jaguars are selecting at number three. You may not think that there's an offensive lineman worth that number three pick, but you may still think the offensive line or a position specifically on that offensive line is the biggest need for this Jacksonville Jaguars team. Let us know. You can do that on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osher, O-E-H-S-E-R, at 1010XL Tyler. Also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. There's a new mock draft out there that we'll be digging into as well. Todd McShay with mock draft version 4.0 that he put up this morning. And it's, well, it's different. And we'll get into how it's different here in just a bit, but he does not have Dante Fowler going to the Jaguars at number three. He does not have Leonard Williams going to the Tennessee Titans at number two. And again, this brings up the discussion that Mike and I have had I don't know how many times. When it comes to mock drafts and these guys, the McShays and the Kuipers and that type of guy in the draft community out there with the National Football League, the mock draft I want from those guys is them trying to guess, their best guess, based on whatever information they have at what the team they're talking about is going to do in the draft, right? That's them trying to put the puzzle together. That's them trying to say that I've heard that Tampa really does like Jameis Winston, so that's why Winston's going one. I've heard that Tennessee really does like Leonard Williams, so that's why Leonard Williams is going two, despite the fact that they like Marcus Mariota, but they don't love him. I want them to give me the information they feel like they're getting from these NFL teams in a mock draft. Your big board, your player rankings, that's where I want to know your opinion on the player and where he actually fits in as far as just, if I'm just ranking the players in this year's draft, I want to know your honest opinion. I don't care what any team has told you for that big board. I want your opinion as a guy who's going back and evaluating these players on where you think they rank, right? That's the big board, though. And it's too often these guys who do this stuff seem to use the mock draft almost as a big board. And instead of really like taking a look at it from a team perspective, they take a look at it from a board perspective, and they mix it up way too much. I mean, just way too much. There's no need. There's no need. I get that you don't want every mock draft to look exactly the same, so you want to move some things around. But if you really feel solid about what the top five teams in the draft are doing, then leave it alone. There's nothing wrong with that. And just give a little bit more explanation for why on your week-to-week basis, basically, now. But we'll get to Todd McShay's mock draft and exactly what he had in there, as, once again, a national media guy makes a little bit of a fool of himself when talking about the Jaguars, and we'll give you the details on exactly what that means a little bit later on as well. The continued search for a potential veteran wide receiver for this team. Greg Jennings still not signed anywhere. He's taking his time, making his decisions. Apparently wants to take a few visits before he's going to make up his mind. Are the Jaguars really in the mix for a guy like Greg Jennings? We'll talk to John Osher about that. We'll talk to him about, you know, Michael Crabtree, Nate Washington, these types of guys that are still available to the Jags in free agency. Or is that something they're seriously considering? Or at this point, is it time to just turn your attention towards the NFL draft when it comes to taking a look at that slot wide receiver? And if you're looking at the slot, and this is something, as John Osher joins me here on Jaguars Today, we were talking about just a few moments ago when you came in the building, you know, if the idea is to address the slot, mm-hmm. and you like the guys that you have on the outside, is there even a real consideration in the first two rounds, maybe potentially of the draft, of addressing that position?
Well, people sort of want to say Amari Cooper because he's such a good route runner. You know, again, I don't know. I haven't delved into the details of him and watched a whole bunch of, you know, all 22 Alabama tape. Is he a slot guy? Does he fill that need that Dave is thinking when he was thinking about Randall Cobb? I don't know that he's that guy. Maybe he is, you know, because guys can play different spots. But I'm just not sure. I have a tough time thinking they're going wide receiver that early.
Me too.
I can't get around it. But I also didn't think they'd take Blake Bortles that early last year. So
nobody did.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We're doing all this talk, and we can talk about this more during the show, but, you know, we're not going to really know what Dave's doing until the moment that he pulls the trigger that night. Because if anything, he has shown that he can go look like he's scouting one way and pretty good at not showing the cards.
No, I can remember last year when we were getting ready for the draft and the discussion about what the Jags were going to do at three. Clowney's going number one, so that's a pipe dream. He's not falling to us at three, right? And it was, all right, do you like Sammy Watkins, mm-hmm. if he's available to you at three, or do you like Khalil Mack? Like,
right.
That was the discussion we were having at that point in time. And Mike Evans was being brought up by a few people, but not a lot of people, because Sammy Watkins was considered that number one wide receiver prospect. And then I remember being over at the station during the first round of the draft last year, and, you know, when Goodell walked to that podium, and the word had kind of come out that it's going to be a shocker. Like, that's what had come out on Twitter already. It's going to be a shocker here at three.
Right.
And it was Bortles, and it was like, well, okay.
Yeah.
You know, the clock starts for these guys right now, I guess.
And, again, it was one that now when you look back with hindsight, it really wasn't a shocker. You had to get a quarterback. They had, you know, I was writing something this weekend, and they had been to every quarterback pro day mm-hmm. that – of anybody that mattered. They've been to Bridgewater, they've been to Bortles, and I was kind of thinking to myself, well, it wasn't that. And Dave didn't hide it that well. They went to every quarterback pro day. But we didn't know, so he did a good job of selling that. Look, you know, this is not necessarily the year we have to get a quarterback. This is not necessarily the year we have to do that. So credit to him, because he didn't want it out. He did not, you know, he did not want some team trying to trade mm-hmm. up to three or up to two and get past him, so which was a legitimate possibility last year at number two because the Rams took
Greg Robinson.
Yeah, so he was right. If somebody had really wanted a quarterback, you would have thought they could have gotten a number two and gotten out of there. So.
Sure. And even if the talk around the league at that, and we talked about this a lot when they made that pick, but even if the talk around the league, you know, and in the public wasn't that Blake Bortles was considered that high a prospect, mm-hmm. if the Jaguars felt that good about him,
sure.
then they don't know that nobody else does.
Well, and they, you know, they still believe that other teams did feel that. I mean, they obviously didn't feel that good to get to two, but in Dave's mind at that point, they might have felt more strong. Some team might have felt more strongly about getting to two if the Jaguars had given any real indication mm-hmm. that they were going to take him at three. That was the whole reason for the smokescreen or the talk about everybody else, was he didn't want somebody to feel that strongly moved to two, because there was talk afterward that teams felt strongly enough to get to four, five, or six for Bortles, mm-hmm. so they might have felt that strongly to get up to two. So I don't think you're going to have that sort of I just don't think you're going to see teams wanting to go up to get wins. I mean, and Mariota quite like that, but I mean the minority. I mean there are people who feel like there's going to be a real rush for him. I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, it's interesting because the drop off from him to the next guy seems to be so vast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're putting Bryce Petty at third on a lot of these draft boards right now, and Brett Hundley is a guy that's in that kind of mix. And and Bryce Petty, look, if you watch him work out at the NFL Combine, the way he throws the ball, it's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an NFL quarterback,
sure.
the way he throws the ball. But
he has never done anything close to an NFL offense.
Right. And hasn't done an NFL offense, and a lot of people
have
questions.
And Mariota really hadn't either. I mean, that's why, yeah.
The mental side of the game, people have more questions about Bryce Petty doing it than Mariota at this point. But the arm, honestly, of all the guys that I saw throw at the combine, I thought he might have had the best arm. Like, when he throws it, you go,
he's got a good arm.
Wow.
I mean, Winston's got an awfully good arm.
He's got a good one. He's got a good one, but he's got a good head, too. And that's what everyone talks about with that guy, is once you get him down in front of the board and what he can actually do breaking down defenses and that kind of thing. Really, the only question with Jameis Winston is, can he just stay away from the stupidity?
See, to me, I think Jameis is more fascinating in a way than Johnny Football was. I looked at Johnny Football, and it was hard to see his game. If you really took the pizzazz out of his game at A&M, it was really hard to see that translate in the NFL. Maybe he'll prove everybody wrong and still make it. It's hard to imagine at this point. But when you look at Winston, everything he does physically, everything he does on the field, it's prototype for what you want right now, and you can see that translating really well to the NFL. I mean, it's almost as hard to imagine him not making it in terms of his physical ability as it was hard to imagine Manziel making it because of the way he played.
Sure, and I saw, this was a month and a half ago now, but Todd McShay tweeted out something along the lines of, with he had graded all the prospects for this year's draft finally, and he was looking at it, he said, in the past decade, the only quarterback that he would give a higher grade to than Jameis Winston is Andrew Luck. That's the only higher graded player at that position he's had in the last 10 years coming into a draft.
Well, he's got those I mean, people who like prototype, pro-style, old-school quarterbacking, and if they take the off-the-field stuff off the plate with Winston, have to love him because he stands in the pocket, he makes plays from the pocket, he has feel in the pocket, and he has the ability, I don't use the phrase throw people open, but to make NFL throws into seeming NFL windows. Now, it's hard to really translate that because when you watch college games, one thing that stands out to you is there are very few NFL windows anywhere in college because the game's just so much slower. But he tends to do that a lot more than Mariota. Some games you watch him, he was throwing to guys 10, 15 yards open downfield.
Yeah.
Off plays created by the spread, and that's what really scares the people who are scared of him, because you just don't get that sort of play often enough in this league to build your offense around that guy.
Sure, everyone but Philadelphia seems like scared off by that prospect.
Right, scared off, and even with the way Philadelphia runs the offense, because of NFL defenses, even they don't get the wide open throws downfield that college offenses get from running the spread. I mean, that's kind of obvious. You get better defenders all over the place. They're faster. But that's really what, for everybody who looks at numbers out of college and says, boy, this guy's going to do this, this, and this, that's why it's become so hard to translate. And at the owners' meetings last week, talking to people, that's really worked its way down to almost every position. It's hard to scout pass rusher. It's hard to scout pass blocking because the game is now so much different. Teams are running the spread and they're getting the ball out so quickly, it's become hard to even gauge a pass rusher because they don't get the opportunity to rush the passer in the same way that they will the NFL. So it's become a very more and more difficult to scout, and people associate that with quarterbacks because of spread and wide receivers, but it's become difficult to scout all over the at every position because of the way the games are played.
John Osher joining me here today for Jaguars Today. Going to get into Todd McShay's mock draft and a couple storylines from last week's NFL owners meetings kind of come up when you start talking mock drafts now, as teams, all 32 spoke last week for the first time since the NFL season ended, and they're all in the same place, so everyone can go get information at the same time. We'll talk about some of the things that came out of that, especially with the two teams picking before the Jags in this upcoming draft, Tampa Bay and Tennessee, as we take a look at Todd McShay's mock draft. The fan feedback spotlight today, we're asking you quite simply, what is the Jaguars' biggest position of need? Not necessarily what they're going to draft at number three, but what do you think is their biggest position in need that can be anything on the team? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osher, O-E-H-S-E-R, as well as on Facebook, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on the program. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We'll take a look at Todd McShay and his mock draft 4.0. He does not have the Jaguars selecting Dante Fowler Jr. We'll let you know who they do take next here on Jaguars Today. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. They are North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers, semi-auto pistols, rifles, shotguns, tactical rifles. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can trade your guns for gold there. Gunsforjacks.com on South Lane Avenue, or give them a call, 693-0777. Mike Dempsey out today. He's out playing the Guggen Open. For the first time ever, and he came up with the idea like last Thursday.
Like, that's the reason he's out.
Right. He talked to me last Thursday. He's like, hey, I think I may be playing in the Guggen on Monday. And I was like, all right, go play in the Guggen on Monday. We'll be fine without you, Mike, for another day.
I haven't seen Mike in about 3-4 weeks.
It's been a while since you've seen him.
I'm good with.
Yeah. I did the show with him again last week, so I've seen him. You haven't had the opportunity to see him. And
you're a lucky man.
Yeah, and you're going back. You were out at the owners' meetings last week. You're going to Tallahassee tomorrow?
Most likely. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody's going to Tallahassee tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, there'll be a lot of people there.
Yeah, whether you're included.
I'm not sure
in
it's
going to
be me or not. Yeah, we're trying to nail some things down, but we're considering.
Okay. Yeah. Jameis Winston working out there. Obviously, he's the big prospect. But Cam Irving, a guy who could be a consideration for the Jags if he slips down into the top of the second round.
Sure.
A team that, look, we've talked about this before, you and I, they got one guy that snaps the ball right now on this team. So that's certainly something they got to be looking at in the draft at some point.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, I don't know that that's something that you have to draft. You know, with somebody who can snap the ball, you can get a veteran that we're not even really talking about. You just need somebody who can function at that spot if Wingo gets hurt. There's a number of different ways they could go with center. I don't necessarily think that if you don't draft one, a rookie free agent center or a veteran who is released later on, you just have to have somebody who can practice it, who can do it in a pinch. So, yes, I think they will add one. But it doesn't necessarily have to be on the first 2 days of the draft.
Sure. And when I say that, look, Brandon Linder can play center. He did a little bit of it at Miami. But I don't know that you want to pull him out of that right guard spot as well as he plays there right now.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think that's why when you look at the interior, there's a feeling they need to get one more guy so that they're not forced into making a move in the case of injury that they don't necessarily want to make. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you said, most guys who play on the interior can technically snap the ball, and certainly Linder can play the position well. But if you do that, then you're making him do something on the fly where he has to work harder and think more and be out of position, frankly. And then you're weakening perhaps two spots. That's not necessarily something you want to do. Now, he may be so good at it that you want to do that. In that case, then you need to get somebody who can go play that guard spot.
Sure.
Which could be Pastor.
Yeah, thinking back to last year's draft class, is Bowenko, he's got to be the biggest surprise as far as what they actually got out of him. A sixth-round pick.
Yeah.
There were two other guys on this team that they thought could be the center
going
into camp. It wasn't until we were basically that third week of training camp that it's like, all right, we'll try Bowenko there. Nothing else is working.
I think the potential and the way they feel about him would be a surprise at this point. I don't think they expected to feel as strongly now when they draft him. I don't think he's really shown yet that he belongs in the category of, boy, draft day surprise, he is setting on his way. He's shown the potential to be on his way. He hasn't done it the way that Linder did it last year. Linder showed last year that, you know, he's very, very possibly and even probably on his way to a Pro Bowl-type career. He showed it, he did it, he's done it. But Wanko has shown the potential to do it, and they feel strongly that he can do it, hadn't done it yet.
Let's take a look at Todd McShay's got mock draft 4.0 came out this morning.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. Yeah. I got a Derek Morgan feature coming this week at some point on Jaguars.com.
It's a 4.0. He said he shakes it up a little bit with this one. I actually saw him tweet out too. Let me know what you think of the new top five. Why do you need to change it up? If you don't think this is what teams are going to do, then you're just changing it for change's sake. I don't quite understand that aspect.
I will admit I've fallen into that trap a little bit, but I usually sort of couch it by saying, hey, this is mock draft 4.0, and I'm intentionally changing these two picks because it is interesting when you do that, when you're iffy at, say, number two, and you do a switch, it is interesting. I think it's decent reading, which is what I try to make those when I do them for the site. If you switch player A, then all of a sudden the rest of the first round, it's interesting to see how it projects a little differently. And it's interesting in that sense to see how when these teams do their draft scenarios, when Dave Caldwell and the other guys who affect the college selection process back there, they do different scenarios as the draft leads up. They'll do their own mock draft and switch guys around at the top to try to get different scenarios because they want to be prepared. Okay, if a player X falls off here and player Y falls off here, then what happens with the rest of the draft? The further on down in the draft you are, if you're picking 17th, you need to do a lot more of those.
Sure.
Because if the draft falls a certain way, they need to be prepared. And it's interesting to see if you change two or three things at the top, how you're projecting certain teams with their needs and with their draft history, how that might change. So I usually try to be pretty transparent and saying, hey, I don't really think this one's going to happen. Let's throw this out there. I do know one thing. I do know one thing in Todd McShay's that's not going to happen. I don't think Derek Morgan's going to be playing defensive end here.
No, that's not going to happen.
I'm going out on a limb. Unless there's a big trade that I don't know about.
Right. Jameis Winston, he has going number one. Number two, there's been... I get more and more the feeling that somehow Marcus Mariota, the chances of him coming off the board at two, whether it be Tennessee or somebody else, it feels like they're increasing, which means they're probably actually decreasing in reality.
Yeah, Wisenhunt said last week, you know, I thought it was a very good play by Wisenhunt last week. I think it was at his coach's breakfast. I was over by Gus, so I didn't hear Ken talking. But I think his quote about Mariota, that if he comes here, he'll start. Meaning if he goes to Tennessee, that he'll start.
Yep.
It was a great play because it was a meaningless quote, but it's a great quote that everybody uses when somebody says it like that. Yeah, if he comes here, he'll start. That doesn't mean we're going to take him. So I didn't get the impression that changed very much, but it was a great thing for the Tennessee writers to be able to write about for two or three days.
Sure, and it's Tennessee finally talking about Marcus Mariota,
right?
Which is the big piece they have there at number two, if you're assuming that Jameis Winston is going one. And the only reason not to talk about him at two is if you actually like him at two and you think Tampa may like him as well. Like, if you actually liked Marcus Mariota more than Jameis Winston and you didn't want Tampa Bay to catch wind of that, right? That would be the only reason not to talk about Marcus Mariota at two, but I don't get the sense that that's how anybody really feels about those two quarterbacks right now, except again for Philadelphia. And trying to figure out what Chip Kelly's thinking is impossible. But Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota 1-2 to Tampa and Tennessee and McShay's latest mock. That brings us to number three. And the debate that we've been having with, all right, say the two quarterbacks go off the board 1 and 2. We've had this discussion I don't know how many times now. All right, Leonard Williams is still available to you at three. Do you pull the trigger on a guy like that, knowing what you've done in free agency? Do you still go get an edge rusher when you're in that position? Because now you really are in a position to take your favorite player in this entire draft because you're not considering quarterback if you're the Jaguars. Todd McShay ignores all of that and says Amari Cooper to the Jags at three, which, like you said, sometimes you put out something just to be provocative and get people thinking about it a little bit.
From a distance, that makes sense. And remember, everybody who mocks these, we think we know more about the Jaguars' needs, about their history, about what's been said. I base a lot of what I think the Jaguars are going to do on some stuff that Caldwell has gone on the record about since he's gotten here.
Sure.
And a lot of it is the fact that he has said he's a believer in the core positions early in the draft. Quarterback, left tackle, pass rushing ends. That's sort of a standard, out of the book thought for a GM, that you want those guys that are hard to get in free agency because teams don't let them go. So the only way that you get premier guys at those spots usually is to draft them early. So he's had three chances to draft early so far, this being his third. He's taken quarterback, left tackle already. So logic would tell you pass rusher. Now, it's also really hard to get a player that projects as well as Leonard Williams. And that's a spot that it's okay to have a great player at. If he's J.J. Watt, then, or if he's anything close to J.J. Watt,
right,
then Houston has shown you can build the defense around that guy. He can be a core player. If you think Leonard Williams is a long-term core player, then that sort of breaks that trend. And he's good enough to affect the passer, even though he's not a pass-rushing defensive end. So J.J. Watt really wasn't a pass-rushing defensive end. He's not bad at it. You know, newsflash, he's had a lot of sacks. But so that's the reason that everybody around here, I think, bases that, and the fact that there are so many good pass rushers, mm-hmm, it just makes sense, and that's why you mock it. From McShay's point of view, he looks and sees that you still need weapons around Blake Bortles. There's certainly nothing wrong with the receiver core that has Cooper, Lee, and Allen Robinson. The receivers last year look very good. They've shown potential, but none of those guys really emerged the way Beckham or some other players have as one type receivers. From a national point of view, you don't look at the Jaguars receivers core and say they have their one.
Right.
So from a national point of view, I can see why you would pick Cooper there. From somebody who's around the team, it's hard to think that that's the direction they would go, considering they feel good about their receivers and considering that there is a feeling that they need somebody in this defense who can go affect the passer and get the pass rush a little better.
And that brings us to Todd McShay and his reasoning for doing it. His analysis of putting Amari Cooper at three.
Which isn't bad except for one thing.
Yeah. My guess, here's what he says. My guess is that most would have the Jags taking Leonard Williams here, and it could very well play out that way. But here's my thinking on this pick. Jacksonville was proactive in solidifying its defensive front this offseason by re-signing defensive ends Tyson Alualu and Derek Morgan, and I haven't read beyond that yet. Like, once I got to right. him saying that they re-signed Tyson Alualu and Derek Morgan, my head exploded a little bit, and I was like, ugh.
I will say this in Todd's defense. If they had done that, if they had re-signed Derek Morgan,
mm-hmm,
then that theory makes a lot of sense. So let's give him that. The fact that Derek Morgan's never been on the team is points off in that analysis.
Oh, my goodness. How can so like, it just drives me crazy. He also mentions Jared Odrick as somebody they re-signed. Could they still take Williams? Absolutely. He'd be a great fit in the scheme. All this different stuff. That's what Cooper, he's a polished wide receiver prospect, as you'll see coming out of college, with tremendous savvy as a route runner and very good separation skills, ball skills, and big play ability. And look, just talking about Amari Cooper specifically, mm-hmm, and I don't know if the Jaguars are seriously considering him at three or not. I don't know. My guess is that if they're considering a wide receiver, it's Cooper compared to White, because White does feel like that outside threat to me with everything else. Cooper does seem like that route-running guy that you could put in the slot, and he might be fine doing that in the NFL. Even if that wasn't what he did in college, that he'd be fine doing that in the NFL. And it's this debate that we get into every year once we get to this time of year, where you fall in love with somebody's stats at the combine, and all of a sudden they start creeping up boards, maybe more than they should. And I had a conversation with a couple different draft guys over the course of the last couple of weeks, and specifically asking about Amari Cooper versus Kevin White, and whether it's all hype with White or what the deal is. And they're like, well, no, it's not hype. Like, you can go back and you see a lot of what you saw at the combine on tape from him last year. They said the difference between the two guys, and it's a big difference in the NFL, is White doesn't know how to use it.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know how to use the skills he has, and because of that, you know, he is a physical monster,
mm-hmm,
but he's always in contact with somebody. He's not running away from anybody. Amari Cooper is a guy that has learned how to make people miss.
Yeah.
And in the NFL, that's a much better skill than maybe even being just a guy that can run.
I've been struck when you talk to guys about Cooper, guys who know about route running, he's exceptional coming out of college on that level. And now the question is, how much better can he get at it? Will he need to get exceptionally better at it once he gets here? Has he peaked? You know, those are all questions, yeah. But in terms of the ability to run routes and the ability to come in sort of polished, he would seem to have that at a very high level that, you know, makes him interesting, because you think, okay, if he's that skilled, then he has that ability to come in and impact the way the really good ones last year did. And it was an exceptional year last year. So, again, I still can't get past defensive front and pass rusher for this team. But Cooper becomes interesting if you think he's ready to go and to be that good quickly. Because I think what they don't want is another situation where they're drafting offensive guys and sort of waiting for them to develop the way they did last year. There's a feeling that you need them to be a little more ready now, productive now, because a waiting guy that you're depending on is not going to help you immediately.
Sure, and that goes to that. It's a sense of urgency with this team to start winning now. It's
right.
You can't afford to have guys coming in that you're still looking to develop. Doesn't mean that you won't. It means that at number three, you need to be bringing in a guy that's an impact now.
If that's the way they're thinking. So, which feels like they're thinking a little more that way than they did the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's not the way that you like to draft.
By the way, beyond the Jaguars at three with Amari Cooper, he had Leonard Williams going to Oakland at four. I'd be curious to see what Leonard Williams is, or the Oakland Raiders are thinking. If Leonard Williams is still available to him at four, and one of the wide receivers and both quarterbacks have come off the board, just how fast they would turn that Leonard Williams card. Because I haven't even seen that consideration, because Leonard Williams, it was like, there's no way he's getting to four.
Well, and I think the thing that's interesting, that's really, really interesting, is, you know, a lot of the guys that we're talking about are, if you believe, and they do, they need more than just one guy on this team, obviously.
Yeah.
And usually I'm all about stay where you are and take a guy that you think is an impact guy. But if you can trade back in this draft, you're talking about Parker from Louisville and Kevin White and Amari Cooper all being very good receivers coming out. You're talking about five Leo edge rushers or four Leo edge rushers that can potentially make an impact and that are worth liking high. Well, with those two positions being sort of deep, you trade back and you could maybe get those two spots. It's not absurd to think that you could get quality. You've seen different spots where you've had Amari Cooper going 11.
Yeah.
Well, if he's that far back and then you can get a edge rusher 18 or 19, it's risky taking them that late because usually you got to take those guys high, but there's a lot of them this year.
No, there's a ton of them. The McShay's got Dante Fowler going to the Redskins at five, Randy Gregory to the Jets at six, Shane Ray to the Falcons at eight, the guy that Jaguars fans seem to be in love with right now, at least, Vic Beasley at 13 to the New Orleans Saints. And let's see, where does he have
Dupree?
Dupree coming off at 24 to the Arizona Cardinals. So Dupree's a funny thing because I've seen him mocked anywhere from 3 basically down to 24.
Yeah.
It's like no one knows exactly what to do with him because he's a really athletic guy. I mean, another one of those guys who just tested off the charts at the combine, and then you go back and watch his tape, and it's like, well, he looked really good there, and then it's like, where'd he go?
And that sort of plays in a little with, you know, whether you trade back or not. You know, and we won't know this until after the fact, but if Dave is in love with Dupree or Beasley, and if he really thinks highly of all three of these wide receivers and says, you know what, all three of those guys can help us, you know, then a trade back and some maneuvering in the draft. You trade back and then you use a later pick to move back up a little bit. It gives you some equity. Who knows? I mean, there's no question from listening to him at the combine that there is at the owners' meetings, there is a better chance of a move off that three spot than there has been of a move off the two or the three in the last couple of years. The move off the two in his first year wasn't going to happen because nobody wanted to move up. There were no opportunities that year because
nobody in that draft.
Yeah, it was perceived as a weak draft. Why move up? Last year there were opportunities, but he did not want to move back and risk losing Blake Bortles. This year, it feels like there's going to be some opportunity. You never know until you're on the clock. But he certainly sounds more open to moving back. And there certainly seems to be a higher chance of a move back than there has been in the last couple of years. So well, I'd almost be, I'm not going to say I would be surprised if there's not a move back, because I'm always surprised when there's a move, because it's always harder to trade than it is to talk about a trade beforehand.
Right.
It's always harder in reality than it is in conversation. But he certainly seems to think there's a better chance of one, or the opportunity for one. At the same time, if he loves Leonard Williams, if he loves one of those guys, if you love that guy early, take him.
Want to talk a little bit about Dave Caldwell and kind of that idea coming into the draft. You know, how conservative is he as a general manager with those picks? And is those first 2 years, it, because he's conservative, is that the reason they didn't move, or was it something else? We'll talk about that. Also want to talk about why we both still feel like it's hard for me to get away from pass rusher there at that number three spot. And we'll talk a little bit about why that is as we continue on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey will be back with us tomorrow. He's out on the golf course right now playing at the Guggen Open. Fat Tony and John Osher here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars Today. Rolling along here on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey out playing golf at the Guggen Open. He'll be back with us tomorrow. I'm Fat Tony. John Osher here with me today, although he's wandering around the building somewhere at the moment. Some news coming down here in just the last couple minutes. We talked about it last week with the owners' meetings that Atlanta and Cleveland had been informed by the NFL what their punishment would be, involving, for Atlanta, the pumping in of sound via their sound system during home games. For a couple of years, they were being accused of that. The NFL had decided what punishment they were going to get. The Cleveland Browns, their GM, Rafe Farmer, was texting down to the sideline during games, basically to send in plays to somebody. And the NFL apparently informed those two teams what the punishment was going to be for them last week at the NFL owners' meetings. But they were waiting until this week to make them public. And they're not completely public yet, but Adam Schefter tweeting out just a few moments ago that the NFL is expected to suspend Falcons president Rich McKay from the competition committee and take a draft pick away from Atlanta for the piping in of crowd noise. So Rich McKay would be taken off that competition committee, a draft pick. We all kind of expected a draft pick to go. Still curious to see what kind of draft pick is going to be taken away from Atlanta. With Cleveland, general manager Rafe Farmer, he's expected to be suspended for his TextGate role, but Cleveland is not expected to lose a draft pick. That's according to sources from Adam Schefter. So, still to be seen exactly what the punishment going to be for those two, but it would be interesting if Atlanta is going to lose a draft pick and Cleveland is not. It certainly sounded like last week, coming out of the owners' meetings, that both those teams would be forfeiting some kind of draft pick at some point in time.
And Tony,
according to the latest, it doesn't sound that way.
Which one is worse in your opinion?
I don't know. Probably the Atlanta thing, piping in crowd noise. I don't know that a general manager sending play calls to the sideline even bothers me all that much. Like, it's against an NFL rule, but I don't know how much it bothers me. Atlanta trying to take a direct advantage of being able to pipe in crowd noise to affect the other team bothers me a little bit more. How about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, because in theory, couldn't the GM go down to the sideline and do that? I don't know.
In theory, he could be down there.
Yeah.
I still don't know, like, how they would police what kind of role he's having on the sideline.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you get caught doing crowd noise, it's a direct effect on the game. So you would think that'd be more of a punishable offense.
Sure. I know you covered the Colts for a few years, and
always in it.
Jaguars fans love to accuse the Colts of that same kind of thing. I remember the audio from that playoff game, you know, 7-8 years ago, where it sounded like it clicked.
Right.
It was almost like there was a glitch in the sound that they were using to pump in.
Yeah. The only thing on crowd noise with Indy, and I know the Jaguars fans passionately believe they pipe noise into the dome, I knew the person who was in charge of the RCA Dome on game days.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that the fact that it was not at the Colts stadium, meaning it was an independently run building. Somebody not with the Colts would have had to be in charge of crowd noise. And that's a big leap if a team is going to do that, which I don't believe they did. All of a sudden, you're getting people involved. Think about Deflategate.
Right.
Where all of a sudden there are people involved that, if there are people involved who are not in your building and are not under your control, not in your thing, then all of a sudden the ability to talk gets a lot more, if that was happening back then, I believe it would have come out by now.
We got this state in football history and the Honda driver on the NFL coming up. Before we get to that, though, I want to talk a little bit about Dave Caldwell and what kind of general manager he is, especially on draft day. And we've seen him last year. He moved up a couple times to go get guys he liked. He wanted to get back into the second round to go get Allen Robinson. Mm-hmm. He wanted to get back into the third round to go get Brandon Linder, and he made the moves necessary to do that. They had more ammunition.
Right, remember, and I think that's the key. They had gotten ahead in terms of numbers with the Mike Thomas trade. That was the reason for the Eugene Monroe trade, was to try to get some picks so he had flexibility. It strikes me, and again, it's so hard to know exactly what the philosophy is because you're not inside someone's head. And he's not going to lay out, before the draft, he's not going to lay out a game plan because it has to come to you and you got to feel it. But it does strike me that he staunchly believes that you want a number of rookies that's not four or five each year, if you follow. I mean, he wants rookies because there's a percentage game that goes on. If you bring 12 to 14 what they call priority free agents and draft picks in, never are all 14 of those guys going to be good players. You're always going to get guys who miss.
Sure.
So you want to have your numbers up. And I think he believes that firmly. So I don't think you're going to see a case where you have a 7-pick draft where he trades 3 picks away and we're having a press conference on Monday with 4 draft picks.
Which makes it really unlikely, unless they move down in the first round, that they're making any kind of noise to get back into the first round. Because they only have the 7 picks.
But I think if you trade down.
If you trade down, that changes everything.
Right.
Because now they do have that ammunition you're talking about. And it's pretty incredible when you think about, all right, that they got anything for Blaine Gabbert is still amazing to
me.
But the Mike Thomas pick came into play for them in one of these trades. The Eugene Monroe trade that they made with Luke Jokel coming in that year came into play last year in that draft as well. They've done pretty well from that perspective since Caldwell's got here. What we haven't seen him do is trade back.
Right.
We haven't seen that from him, and I think it makes some fans question if he's demanding too much to make that kind of thing happen on draft day, if the price is just too high, or was it just the circumstance of these first two drafts he's been involved in?
Well, again, I don't know what calls he has or hasn't gotten about picks in the 2nd to 7th rounds. I mean, that hasn't been discussed. It really doesn't come up when you're talking to him because you don't sit there and say, hey, did you get any, it's just not as detailed and as reported.
Yeah, you just kind of ask, hey, were there any offers for that number 3 pick last year?
Yeah, that's like, the interest.
Yeah, we had some interest, but we weren't going anywhere.
I think so far, and he's pretty candid after the fact on things. I think anybody who's been around this franchise covering him would say you don't get the sense that he hides things after the fact. Well, the first year, he said flat, we didn't get any offers to move up, which made sense because it was generally perceived as a weak top 10.
Yep.
So there, I don't think it was a case of being demanding. I think it was a case where he would have liked to have traded back and couldn't. Last year, he has flat out said that the reasoning for not trading back was because they thought they had their quarterback. That was their belief, and they did not want to risk trading back to number, I think it was Sammy Watkins or there's something involving Sammy Watkins. They could have traded back for a team wanting to come up and get him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't feel like it was worth the risk. So did he want too high a price? I don't know that he's actually said what the price would have been to not get Blake Bortles. I'm not sure there was a price, because when it comes to quarterback, that skews everybody in the league's price.
And the reason it was in play, Buffalo was the team that had to have been talking to Jacksonville because they traded in right behind Jacksonville with Cleveland. They're at number four. And
right, I was drawing a blank on the specifics of what Dave said, but there was some movement
and again,
for a team to get up to three.
If you're the Jags, right, if you're in that situation last year where you're Dave Caldwell, you really like Blake Bortles, like that's the guy you want to get in this draft. The position you're in, that's the guy you want to walk away with in this draft. You have a quarterback starved team right behind you in Cleveland that you don't know.
Right.
You just don't know if you let Blake Bortles, even if you make that trade with Buffalo and you're only going down to eight,
right.
I think it was,
right.
at the time. But even if you're only going down to eight, you don't know what
right.
Cleveland does or doesn't think
Their
about Blake Bortles.
Their belief strongly was and is that Bortles wouldn't have been there at eight.
And who knows if they were right. right or wrong on that, but they made the decision they made. You have a quarterback that you're hoping turns into a franchise quarterback, and they weren't willing to risk not having that player
right.
to pick up another draft pick or two.
Right.
That's the position they were in. And, by the way, that was what Dave Caldwell said as well, which they evaluated the quarterback position in this draft and the next one,
right.
and probably the position they felt like they were going to be in.
Right.
In this draft, now, I don't think they expected to be picking third
right.
in the 2015 draft when everything was said and done.
Well, and if you think about it, even if they were, and I don't think they were either, but even if they were sitting in their draft room, you know, 4 days before the 2014 draft and thinking, we're going to be picking second or third. Okay, if they believed that, or if that was one of their scenarios, well, if that's the case, then right now, they'd be looking at a case where we don't have a quarterback, and Tampa Bay is taking the best quarterback available.
Right.
Well, from reading the tea leaves and listening to Dave Caldwell over the years, he has talked about the thing he wants in a quarterback is a guy who can make plays with his arm from the pocket to win games. Now, that's Jameis Winston. It's not Marcus Mariota.
Not yet.
Well, yeah, that's not what you think you're drafting. If you're drafting him at two, you're not drafting him because of that ability yet.
Right.
You're drafting him because he can move around, because he's smart, because he's a whole lot of other things.
And you hope to develop that.
So from their perspective, they were right, because I don't think they would have wanted Marcus Mariota at number two or three this year.
Sure.
In terms of, if that's what you believe, you know, the quarterbacks that Dave Caldwell has been involved with, Peyton Manning, Matt Ryan, Blake Bortles, that's not what Marcus Mariota is. So from their perspective, I don't think they would have thought that they are missing out on a quarterback they'd have wanted this year.
Yeah, and that's why they made the decision they did, and I'm glad to not have to have the conversation about should they take Marcus Mariota or do you wait till the top of the second
right.
round for a price peg?
Now, Jameis Winston, I think, would have been more tempting
right.
and would have brought a whole lot of other stuff. Obviously, we all know the stuff.
And actually, that probably would be the conversation. What would you be willing to give up to get to number one? If you're a Jaguars fan, I think that would be a lot of
and
the
I'm
conversation
not sure,
we're having.
I'm not sure there would be anything that the Bucs would take.
Right.
I don't know that. I don't know there's not, but it doesn't strike you that there's very much uncertainty in Tampa.
No, it certainly doesn't, but we don't have to worry about it because they did select Blake Bortles, and now you just have to hope that he turns into the player or prospect that they want him to be.
You know what they ought to do? They ought to trade Derek Morgan for him.
I heard Tennessee might be interested in Derek Morgan. The Titans, they're in the division. One of those rare interdivision trades.
Mm-hmm.
We got this date in football history in the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up. Still going to get into why we both think that pass rusher is the most logical thing to do there with that number three spot as we continue along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. And look, it's the offseason, so it's pretty much here's who was born on this date during this time of year. But March 30th, it is March 30th, 2015, the most notable birthday today. And thank goodness he played one season here in Jacksonville. So I have something to talk about on this date in football history. But Brendan Stye, the offensive guard, is it Stye or Stay? Right. Played one season with the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2000. Started all 16 games. He is 43 years old today, and that really is the most notable birthday today. Toby Gowan, the punter for the Dallas Cowboys, is the only other name I really recognize. among the guys that were born today. I remember I saw Rodney Thomas, right, running back, and I was like, did he have, like, one good year? And I went back and looked at his stats. His rookie year, he ran for, like, 900 yards. Beyond that, he had 400 yards as a max.
That's no Brendan Stye, I'll tell you that.
That's no Brendan Stye born on this
day. Dave DeCandis, birthday today.
Oh.
Assistant video producer. That might be as big as Brendan Stye.
That's a much bigger deal to me, at least. Happy birthday, Dave.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Part of the Jaguars.com staff here in the building. So that's this date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company at Jacksonville. At Best Fence, the mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Call them today at 904-268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, Adam Schefter broke some news about 20 minutes ago, and we briefly got into that. The NFL is expected to suspend Falcons president Rich McKay from the competition committee and take a draft pick away from Atlanta for piping in crowd noise. Schefter also continues on to say Browns GM Ray Farmer is expected to be suspended for the Texgate role he participated in, but Cleveland is not expected to lose a draft pick. According to Schefter's sources, he closes out by saying Cleveland and Atlanta could be facing some big-time fines. Also, Saints cornerback Brian Dixon was arrested Monday in Miami. He was charged with resisting an officer and also got a couple of traffic citations. And finally, new Eagles quarterback Sam Bradford tore his ACL again last year in the preseason. And after the injury, Bradford seriously contemplated retirement and was swayed out of that decision by Sooners legend Josh Whipple, who was Sam's quarterback coach at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting little story that he would have to be convinced to come back. And look, you're going to get paid, so mm-hmm. I would suggest you come back, Sam. But that's a guy suffering that second ACL injury. You can certainly understand where the thought would come into his head. What is this worth it to me to go through another one of these rehabs? Rich McKay being taken off the competition mm-hmm. committee, how much of an impact is that for the Falcons?
Well, for the Falcons, not much. I mean, it doesn't, a person's role in the competition committee doesn't really affect the team that much. It's continuity on the competition committee. Rich has been on the competition committee, and has been the face and the voice of that for a long, long time. So it's significant within league circles that the chairman, he's been either the co-chair with Jeff Fisher or I believe Holmgren a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
For a long, long time. It doesn't, in terms of the day-to-day operations of the person's football team, it really doesn't go back and affect that very much as just the logistics and the way that runs. It's a blow to Rich, you know, because I'm sure there's some, you know, status and some stature involved with being the competition committee co-chair. But in terms of how it'll affect the Falcons, not much at all.
I saw one other story kind of obviously away from the field this weekend. Russell Wilson went and did his thing with the Rangers after being drafted by them again this week. Apparently he had a home run in batting practice. He takes infield with him every year, and it's kind of cool when you read about this stuff. The players on that Rangers team get to pick his brain a little bit about, you know, winning a championship in another sport. It may be the NFL, it may not be baseball,
right,
but talking to him about that championship mentality and some of the things that he does. Do you think we'll ever see a guy that's a two-sport star again? It's just everything is so specialized now.
Yeah.
I do the trivia on mm-hmm. Sunday nights at Cole Haynes, and even in a game like baseball, where there was a point in time where it wasn't uncommon for there to be a player manager in the game.
Right.
It wasn't uncommon for a guy to be a part of a team and managing that team. We haven't had it since 1986 in baseball because
wow.
those roles have been so defined now. Mm-hmm. There are managers and there are players, and they don't overlap at all anymore. I don't know. If you can't do two jobs in one sport, are we at a point where we're past anybody playing two?
I mean, it would obviously be an amazing story. I think it could happen again at the positions that had happened before. Running back in football is not necessarily a position where you have to be here the entire off season to know what you're doing at the running back position.
Right.
I mean, it's It's very much, you know, Maurice was not here all the time in the off season and played well. The cornerback position, which was where Deion played. I'm referring to Bo Jackson, obviously, in the 80s.
Right.
So, yeah, it could have. I mean, a Deion Sanders who was such a gifted sort of player, I don't see any reason he couldn't come in and play cornerback and then go play baseball. You would think that contract-wise, liability-wise, the teams certainly wouldn't want it. I mean, that would be the major hurdle is, you know, we're paying you X. What if you get hurt? I mean, that would be, you know, there's so much money that would a player be willing to take, okay, I'm going to go play this and give you some sort of assurance in the contract that you're out of it if I get hurt. You know, something like that could be more of an issue. But I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but it wouldn't be an absolute. With positions like that, I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility. With a quarterback,
Not going to happen. There's just too much expected of that guy. He's the face of a franchise.
Well, the quarterback is the guy that, you know, all the other positions, if they're not there during OTAs and around the clock during the off season, it's a story, but it's a blip. If the starting quarterback's not there, it's hard to function.
Right.
Like the starting quarterback, you know, if Blake Bortles isn't here when they open OTAs, that's a major story, and it's a what are you doing? But he'll be, I mean, that's not going to happen. But the quarterback has to be there because that's the functioning point in the offense. That's the brain. And we all get what that is. Any other position, if they're not there, you can practice. You can have continuity. The guy can come in and learn. So I don't see any way in the world a quarterback could ever play another sport.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if it would work at some point in the near future where one of these really athletic tight ends that we have coming into the league that are guys that play basketball for a long time, you know, the Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, even Julius Thomas, who the Jaguars just signed, and they get to a point where basketball isn't going to work for them, and they realize that, and then they say, well, I'm a big athletic guy. Let me go try playing football.
Right.
If instead you had one of those guys that really committed himself to playing both sports at the same time, because they are played at different times of the year, even in high school. So you could do that kind of thing if you wanted to as a high school and a college athlete. We just haven't seen one of those guys do it. It's always a guy who plays basketball until he can't play anymore, and then he's like, let me try football.
It always strikes me that basketball would be a harder transition just because of you're sort of more part of a team concept, whereas baseball seemed like it worked because they could sort of come in and bat. It's a little less, it seems more individualistic once you're in there, but
and it's the whole offseason.
That's just the ozone theory. Who knows if that's any
right. I mean, baseball,
I'm sure a baseball person saying, what are you talking about?
Right. Baseball basically is the offseason of football, though. You may miss, if you're on a really good baseball team, you're going to miss a couple months of the NFL season, which is, you know, Bo Jackson's a guy who would come in at week 8, 9 and go play for the Oakland Raiders because he was playing for Kansas City at the time. And the Raiders were very understanding of that.
Right.
Because they,
and
that whole situation
where
just won't happen again.
Right. That's where it's really tough to see that ever happening, to where an NFL team would be willing to give up any amount of season from a player on that level. And, of course, Bo had already established himself. It was a different sort of story. He had established that was going to happen, and they sort of catered to that.
And if you love both sports, right, if you love baseball and you love football, are you going to play baseball April to August? And then when it really starts to getting down to that nitty-gritty time of the year, we're making a playoff run, we're trying to go win a championship, that's when you're going to listen to an NFL team saying, well, you got to come over here now.
I forget, and it was before I covered the league, Deion did it, but Deion played the whole football season.
He did.
Yeah.
He would take, like, the Braves or whatever would give him Sundays off.
Right, that's right, that's right.
They would give him Sundays off so he could go play.
Right. And that's where you wonder if that sort of dynamic would ever be acceptable in the NFL again. It would have to be something very special.
No, it would be. I'm
and again,
curious
a player
if we'll ever
can come
it.
In and just play.
Yeah, I'm curious if we'll ever see that kind of thing. I would love to, because I think it would be fun as a fan of sports to watch that kind of story unfold, especially if it's a player that is the caliber of a Bo Jackson or a Deion Sanders, where they can play both games at that kind of level. I'm not convinced we'll ever be able to see that kind of thing again.
Yeah, and again, it was special circumstance at the time, so it's difficult to say, oh, it never happened, because 5 years before that, I'm sure people were saying it would never happen. So something could happen to make it work, but it would take sort of a renegade type owner or GM who was willing to say, yeah, let's make this happen.
And player, so, to some degree.
Maybe Chip Kelly. Who knows?
Right. And player to some degree, because that's how it was with Bo Jackson. Both those things had to collide.
Right.
And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that year did everything they could. I mean, they told Bo, no, you're not playing baseball anymore.
Right.
We're going to draft you with the number one overall pick. You're not playing baseball anymore. There's the whole thing with the team flight that they told Bo wasn't going to affect his eligibility for college baseball.
Right.
And in the end, it cost him his senior season, which is part of the reason why he decided also not to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Spent that whole year playing baseball. Mm-hmm. And the next year, a Maverick owner and Al Davis said, all right, seventh-round pick, Bo, come on down.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that a guy that talented, the year before is good enough to be the number one overall pick, that every team in the NFL assumes six times that he's just not playing football anymore.
Right.
And then one owner said, all right, why not? Bo Jackson.
Yeah, and it strikes you that sort of drop wouldn't happen these days. But again, the way teams value draft picks, if there's that risk, who knows? I mean, again, the other interesting thing there is talking about running back first overall.
Yes,
you are. Would you ever see that? I mean, you know, that's, again, the way the game has changed. Would a running back be perceived as having that sort of value now? I mean, it's interesting.
No, it certainly is. Let's get back to the Jags and that number three pick, and we'll talk a little bit about why we're both kind of on board with this. It feels like it's going to be pass rush. They're number three. Defensive end, pass rush, they're three. We'll explain a little bit why we feel that way, and just I can't get off of it either. I get that receiver could be a consideration. I get that even offensive lineman, if you want to make it one, could be a consideration for this team, but I can't get away from that defensive line. So we'll get into that here in just a moment as we continue on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday edition of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, he's out playing the Guggen Open. He'll be back with us tomorrow. I'm Fat Tony, John Oger alongside here on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony, John Oger, the senior writer for Jaguars.com, alongside as we talk a little Jaguars football, NFL, the punishment we kind of know being handed down for Atlanta and Cleveland. I'm sure we'll get confirmation from the league, if that's leaking out from Adam Schefter this morning, sometime in the next couple hours, you would expect the league to make a formal announcement of whatever the punishments are going to be for those two teams. But it sounds like Rich McKay off the competition committee for the Falcons and a draft pick of some sort being taken away from them. I would not expect that to be that top 10 pick that they have in the first round. Maybe.
Now, to say Rich was suspended, correct? From the competition committee.
Removed.
Okay.
How I saw it. But again, we'll get clarification.
Yeah, and it's tough to be on the committee where you're the gatekeeper of the rules when your team blatantly broke the rules. So
yeah, and for Cleveland, we're not sure exactly what it's going to be yet, but it doesn't sound like a draft pick being taken away from them. Rich McKay to be suspended.
Right.
What that means for a general manager to be suspended, I'm not sure. Again, he doesn't get to go to the games for a month. I mean, what does that mean in the end for a general manager? I don't know. But we'll see exactly what the punishment's going to look like for those teams. A little bit later on this afternoon, we've been talking a lot about the Jags draft. Todd McShay put out his mock draft 4.0 this morning where he thought the Jaguars had re-signed Derek Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, had the two quarterbacks going 1-2 and Amari Cooper coming to the Jaguars at number 3.
It is kind of interesting on mock drafts how out of the combine, it became like for a month, you didn't see any mock draft that didn't have Dante Fowler.
Right.
And you sort of knew that wasn't going to hold in the mock draft world because now all of a sudden you've done that for 2 or 3 weeks and now people are looking, well, let's figure out a way to change this up. Let's talk a little bit more about it. So you sort of wonder, is this, I don't think it's a reflection on the way Dave's thinking because I don't think anybody knows the way Dave's thinking.
No.
It's more, there has become almost a mock draft flow and feel, where in January they do it one way. At the combine, everybody goes there at the combine, and either from what they see or from what they talk to each other while they're there, they come out with a new series of mocks. And then everybody sees each other's mocks and does a lot of mocks based off that, and then you see a trend. And now as pro days approach, or as pro days finish, and as the real draft approach, you're going to see more where things ebb and flow. You're going to see a lot of guys throwing some stuff at the wall. And the big one will be 4 or 5 days before the draft, where Mayock puts his out. And then everybody's going to change things based off that. And then finally you'll have the draft and they don't matter anymore. So it's all,
yeah,
it's all throwing it out there, speculation, fun. The ones that are the most interesting to me are always the ones as you get closer, when some people take the mock drafts and they call around and they do the writer's mock draft.
Mm-hmm.
The beat writer's mock draft is always very interesting because it's a little different than the others, because you're getting the people who are really, or you're getting a percentage wise, people who generally are talking to the general manager, to somebody in the organization within the last 4 or 5 days. That means you're getting one of two things. You're getting a good feel for it, or you're getting a good feel for the lies.
Yep. And, you know, we've...
Which can be the same thing. It's all fun.
Yeah, Mike's been doing one of those for basically 10 years now, where the day before the draft, or the day of the draft, we've been doing our media mock draft, and we'll try to get beat writers or media guys from all 32 NFL cities to come on and talk about it.
It's always pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's a really fun show. It's one of my favorite shows of the year every year, because you get a real idea of how we talk to a bunch of draft experts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked to Tony Pauline a handful of times. We talked to Dane Brugler last week. We talked to Charles Davis a couple weeks ago. We'll probably talk to Mayock and McShay and these guys. We'll talk to all those guys before we get to the draft. And it's always interesting that week of, when you start talking to the guys who are in those buildings and talk to those guys every day, and what their opinion is.
Now, again, you don't always get... That's not to say that those writer mocks always end up being accurate. But the thing that is good, especially if you're getting them to talk about what the selection is, which is what you do on yours, you do get a feel for at least what they're putting out there. And a feel for what the theme is in that market as you approach. Now, again, that doesn't mean that the GM isn't putting a smokescreen out, which is always very possible. But it gets you a lot closer to really what – I think at the top, you can generally get a really good idea from talking to the beat writer in the last 4 or 5 days before it. It's a very good way of figuring out really what the inner thinking of that organization is.
No, it is. Again, Tom McShay with his latest mock draft has the 2 quarterbacks, 1-2. Amari Cooper, number 3, and we've been discussing, and when Mike was gone a couple weeks ago, you and I had this conversation as well, right? But a couple weeks ago, we had you in, and we talked about, for me at least, I look at this team, and I'm not sure that I think that pass rush position, that right end, Leo, whatever you want to call it, I don't necessarily think it's the biggest need on this team, but I think it's the most probable pick for this team at number 3. Not just because of what's available to him, but because the draft isn't always about what you need right now, especially there at the top of the draft. It's projecting a player that you're going to have, hopefully, as an impact player for the next 4 or 5 years. And when you look at that Leo position for this football team, you don't know what it's going to look like in 2016. Right now, and you have an opportunity at number 3 to maybe put a piece of the puzzle in there that you're not going to have to worry about it in next year's free agency or draft with the guy that you can take this year.
Again, I haven't been so locked on to absolute Leo pass rusher, but something up front to continue solidifying, strengthening that area, being able to continue going 6 or 7 deep up there. And that's why the Leonard Williams thing still makes sense to me. If he's an impact guy, if he's as good as people believe, then there's nothing wrong with taking him at number 3, because there's nothing wrong with having more than 1 or 2 or 3 good defensive linemen. You can find a place to play those guys. You can figure it out. If they're impact guys, you can figure out a way to use them. There's 75 plays in NFL games. you don't have to just play the top four guys on your depth chart to be effective. You know, across the board.
Especially at a position like that.
Yeah, with the assumption that Leonard Williams is gone, then with as good as everything we're talking about is assuming they stay at three, mm-hmm. obviously. So that seems to be, if you talk to draft people, Fowler seems to be the guy that comes up next. We're talking about Leonard Williams, who seems to be worthy of that number three pick. And he fits a spot where they believe that it's worthy of taking that position at that spot. So I don't think you're going to see an offensive lineman slide up into that spot this year. I don't think you're going to see running back. I don't think you're going to see slot. It just seems to fit this year. Now, that said, we're not going to know what Dave's thinking until draft night.
No, we're not.
And that's what makes this so intriguing, because it looks like all the tea leaves look like that position, and yet there's sneaky feelings that maybe wide receiver, maybe this. But I don't think it's going to be offensive line, running. Some of these other positions people are talking about, it all seems to point very good year for defensive line and pass rusher up top, coupled with Dave's feelings about the position, coupled with what you said, that all the offseason moves still leave that Leo spot as something that could be addressed. It all seems to fit and make sense.
No, it does. And I do think the Jaguars are in a better position to move back in this draft than they have been in the previous two. Like, I feel like they're in a better position to do that. And we don't know for sure if they are going to make that trade back until the day of the draft, that, first of all, that they're going to do it, or why they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. But it feels like, looking at it now, a month out, that if this is a team that is looking to trade back in the draft from that number three pick, my guess is it's because they feel about the same way about a lot of these pass rushers, mm-hmm. like they really are as bunched up as they feel like they may be right now, or they don't want to draft that position because they feel like they can get that a little bit later mm-hmm. on in the draft, and they do want to draft either an offensive lineman or a wide receiver or something like that, and they feel like the value would be there for them to move back. But again, we don't know the answers to that until draft day.
It would just surprise me if you see them go offensive line in the first round. I think they've got guys at the spots that they feel like can develop. They're not going – I don't see them thinking that they need to go left tackle or right tackle. You know, and as much as Luke struggled at times, there's not a feeling within the building, we need to draft over Luke Jokel or we need to draft over Parnell. So if you're not taking those outside positions – are you going to trade back to number 10 and take an interior lineman when you like Linder and you've got Beto? I just don't know that they feel like that's the way to go.
Probably not. Probably not. And again, I don't even think it becomes a consideration unless they move out of that three spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not...
I don't think there's any way they do it at three.
If they traded down to 13, 14, maybe it says something about how they feel about a prospect on the offensive line compared to some of these pass rushers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't expect that to be what the team does. My gut tells me that they're probably going to wind up at three in this draft, that they're not going to move out of that spot because they will like one of these guys mm-hmm. more than the other ones enough.
Right.
But that if they do move back, it's because they have three or four of these guys with about the same grade.
It was interesting, Peter King in the Monday Morning Quarterback, I think he talked a little about that there's eight or nine really elite players in this draft, and then after that, it sort of becomes where a lot of the guys, different teams feel different ways about a group. I'm still of the belief this team needs, more than anything, they need some real difference makers that you have to game plan for, that are big-time guys. So if you're trading too far back and you're risking losing that, if you believe that Leonard Williams, no matter what you've got at that spot, if you believe that a Leonard Williams, if you are worried that in 4 years you're going to be looking back and saying, why in the world did we not take Leonard Williams? What were we thinking? Then you stay there and take it no matter what else you've got at that position.
No, I'm with you. And I think that is what the team needs as much as anything, is
guys that other players stop practice to watch.
Yes. Yes.
Would
and
be really cool to have.
They may have an opportunity to do that at three. And if they move past that, their opportunity to do that shrinks.
Right.
It's the allure of the two quarterbacks going 1-2 so that the Jaguars going into this draft without a quarterback need can just take whatever player they think is the best player in this draft.
Now, if you feel like there's a player at number 11 that qualifies as that guy, if you love two or three of those guys enough and you're like, you know what, we're going to be able to get a guy that we get fired up about at 10, then by all means go back.
Yeah, if you feel like you can get him at 10
right,
and not have to draft him at 3. But that's, again, the gamble you make
in
the NFL draft, and we'll be talking about for the next 4 weeks. We promise this is not the last conversation we'll be having about that number 3 pick in the NFL draft. The fan feedback spotlight today, we're asking you, Jaguars fans, what do you think is the biggest need on this Jaguars roster right now? Not necessarily, again, what they're going to take at number 3, but what is the biggest need on this Jaguars roster? You can get in touch with us at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, at John Osher, O-E-H-S-E-R, and on Facebook, our Jaguars Today Facebook page on there. We'll get to some of your responses to that question. What is the Jaguars' biggest need right now on that roster as we continue along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, the fan feedback spotlight today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Ask Jaguars fans what drives you. Today in the Tom Bush Fan Feedback Spotlight, we ask what is the biggest need for this Jacksonville Jaguars team right now? Some of the responses we got on Twitter from Isaiah, he says, defensive end or safety. You need to be able to create pressure, yet you need to create havoc in the back. From Nick, edge pass rusher, feel we have solidified other areas of need. From Jeff, has to be another rookie wide receiver or offensive lineman. From Todd McShay, probably, shaking my head. In reality, defensive end or free safety. From Jeff. From Christoph, besides pass rusher, linebacker, and depth at linebacker. From Chris, we got still very concerned about offensive line. Needed strong veteran free agents. Didn't get them, in my opinion. Draft won't fix it either. From at Irish Jaguar, free safety. Single most glaring need on the team with zero potential fills available in the draft. And that could be true. There's not a whole lot of free safety in this draft either. From Black Dog, the biggest need is to supply B2 with a personal badass angry bodyguard. Hashtag nasty. Maybe they got that in Jeremy Purnell. You don't know. From Bobby, free safety. We have decent depth, but a playmaker there would be awesome. And maybe fullback. Hashtag where's Will T? He's unsigned. From Eric, linebacker is the biggest position of need for me. Free safety is a close second. Safety is an interesting one because I'm not sure what kind of player Sergio Brown is.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know how much he's going to give you.
Well, again, with this, I mean, everything points to they got him because they feel like they needed somebody at the spot. Is he a long-term lock? We'll see. I mean, I don't think that, based on the contract, based on, the 8 games as a starter last year. I mean, he is not a guy that you're bringing in and you're saying, we're locked down at this spot for the next 3 or 4 years. And that's what they, I mean, I heard the email you read about didn't get it in free agency with the offensive line. They got the right tackle they wanted. Make no mistake about that. The right tackle they wanted in free agency was Parnell. Over Bulaga, over anybody else that was in or not or whatever. They think that he is that, badass? That's what they believe.
When you
they
watch
got.
Him, the potential is there.
Yeah.
The potential is there for them to have gotten that guy.
I guess my point is, they missed out on Cobb and McCourty. They had targeted those guys. They wanted those guys. There was not a miss at right tackle.
No.
That was the guy they wanted.
Yeah.
So
they didn't want Bulaga.
Whatever you think about the scouting, we'll see. But it's not a case where they feel like, oh boy, we didn't get what we wanted, so we've got to go draft that. No, it's Parnell and Jokel are the tackles on this team.
Yeah,
and they like that.
Yeah, there's still a question mark about Parnell. It's the first time he's going to be a full-time starter in the league, and what's that going to look like? And look, it's more than fair to have questions about Luke Jokel.
Absolutely.
And what kind of player he's going to be in this league at this point after his first two seasons, mm-hmm. the abrupt end to his first year. I know we've talked a lot about, well, he's going to finally have an offseason to really work on it and put on some weight. And look, he's got to show up.
Yep.
He's the number two pick in the draft. They need him to be a, I don't know that franchise left tackle. They need him to be a good left tackle. And if they can get that kind of thing out of him, then in two or three years they can consider replacing him at that position. They don't need to be going into the 2016 draft going, we got to get a left tackle. This isn't working. That's the position that a team that is trying to rebuild just can't find themselves in.
Right.
Let's get out to the phone lines before we get done with the show today. 641-1010 is the phone number. We got Mike dialing us up. What's up, Mike?
Guys, I mean this in a loving way. You guys are tough to listen to. Listen. You get me so my blood boiling. Listen, John, I read everything you write, you and Halligren, on the websites and things like that. Listen, this team need 9 starters to begin this draft. It needed 9 replacements from last year. And a couple of minutes ago, you were just talking about the offensive line. Over 70 sacks, and all we signed was a right tackle. If they go into this year thinking they don't need any offensive linemen, I'm going to make a prediction right now. They'll be 6-10. There's no way they can win with Jokel at left tackle and the center that they have. 70 of those sacks were not caused by the right tackle. They came up the middle and on the left-hand side of the line. They cannot go into this season with those same 4 starters replaced by a right tackle. And I hear no challenge from you when I read any of your articles. There's never any challenge to that fact. It's always talking about defensive rush. That's not what they need. They need an offensive lineman. I'll take your call off the air. Thank you.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the call. Look, I think we just talked about how much this team needs Luke Jokel to step up into that role as a left tackle. No one's.
The call assumes that these guys won't get better.
Right.
And that's not the assumption.
No, and you're trying to...
On the part of the team.
Look,
so, I mean, that's the disconnect.
I don't know if the team's doing the right thing either, but, yeah, they got a bunch of sacks last year, but they didn't create pressure with that defensive line last year. They had needs on both lines of scrimmage. I think they brought in a right tackle that they feel like is the answer at right tackle. They have a second-year guard.
Right.
They have Zane Beatles, who got better throughout the year. Look, they gave up 70 sacks. Everyone knows that.
Mm-hmm.
How much can you possibly do in free agency to address that issue?
Right.
And do you really see anybody we've been talking about at number 3 in the draft? I get it. If you're frustrated with where the offensive line is, there's only so many answers to questions mm-hmm. you have available to you in an offseason. And I don't remember a guard in this offseason. What, Mike Iupati? Is that the guy you're going to bring in? Well, who's going to the bench for Mike Iupati, you know, on this team or this roster? I don't know what answers you wanted them to find.
Right, there's no question they have to improve. But
they think it's coming in-house.
Yeah, I mean, that's the approach, is that they're going to – they got Doug Marrone. They feel like they have young guys who are going to improve, and you add a right tackle to that mix. That's the approach they're taking. So whether you think that's right or not, we'll see next year. But there is a case in this league where guys who are young have to have time to develop and – improve through time, through off season, through experience. And that's the approach they're taking with the other spots. I think there'll be depth signed, but they're not going to go draft a guy, I don't believe, who's going to seriously challenge to be a start at the other 4 spots.
I don't think so either. I wouldn't be totally surprised if they took an offensive lineman with that pick in the second round that could potentially push for a starting spot on this team.
I'll give you that.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's the direction that they went. I'll tell you, Mike, though, as someone who covers this team.
And they also don't believe the line was responsible for all 70 sacks.
Right. I think that there is responsibility to go around, and I'm not saying that I'm convinced Luke Jokel's the left tackle of the future for this team either. I'm not saying that I wouldn't be already considering my options at left tackle. I probably would be, at least in the back of my mind, saying, what do we need to do with this spot? Because there is the potential that you're not going to get anything out of that number 2 pick. And by the way, if they get into that position and it causes your quarterback to not develop the right way, now you're looking at all these guys being gone. I mean, it's their job on the line. I'm not saying that I'm convinced they're doing the right thing. I like Parnell. I really do watching him. I like Parnell at right tackle. I think Linder's going to be a heck of a player in this league. Right.
They're going to need the same time to develop as these guys who you've got.
Sure.
Most likely. That's usually how it plays out with offensive line.
Yeah.
Now, there are exceptions to that rule, but with a young line, with a lot of young linemen, you need them. If you draft another one with them, then they're going to go through the same process that these guys have been going through last year and to a very small extent the year before that.
Yeah. I hold Dave Caldwell responsible for the pick of Luke Jokel, depending on how it works out.
I haven't
seen an answer in that interim between then and now that's like, well, why didn't they go do this
right.
to address that? I haven't seen anything that makes me say, why didn't they go do this to address that position? And that's where I fall on it right now. Not that I'm totally with Caldwell making the decision to draft Jokel, but I don't see what else they could have done in the interim yet.
It's tough because the reality is right now it's a lot harder to find left tackles than it was 15 years ago.
No, it just really, really is. Real quick, let's get Jim in as well at 641-1010. Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys. Just real quick. I think the team needs more than anything else points because this team couldn't even follow the Coughlin rule because the Coughlin rule was if you could hold your opponent to 17 points in this league, you ought to be able to win. And this team couldn't score 17 points. So to me, this is one of the, with Caldwell there, and he was in Atlanta at the time, I've got this strange suspicion that Amari Cooper's on, or at least he's looking at his Julio Jones without having to give up a lot of his draft to get a Julio Jones. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think the obvious pick is defensive end, but, you know, with his experience in Atlanta and everything else with what they did, just to get that one wide receiver that's a difference maker, I wouldn't be surprised. I just, I don't know whether you guys have discussed that scenario or not, but I do think that's the possibility. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Jim. I think it's not pass rusher, it's Cooper.
Yeah, and, you know, 2 months ago I was more dismissive of that than I am now. Now, bear in mind, Jones and Cooper are dramatically different players. I mean, one is a physical guy who wins on physical ability. The other one is a very, very good route runner. So they're different guys, but yes, that is the one that you keep thinking, maybe. If they believe that he's that guy, then, you know, go score points and put skill guys around your quarterback and make sure that he has the weapons to win.
Sure. And I think it goes
that's
to
not absurd.
Something T-Wig and I have been discussing here for the last couple of weeks, basically, but the way that receivers looked at in this league. It's like people have forgotten that Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne work. You know, guys that run really good routes
right.
and can make guys miss in the open field, that still works
right.
in the NFL. You don't have to be 6'5 and 230 pounds
right.
and run a 4.4 40 to be an effective receiver in this league.
That was the Colts one from,
right.
what, 98 until very recently.
Right.
And
it works multiple ways.
If you've got a quarterback who can take advantage of it, it works.
Yeah, it works multiple ways. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, John.
Always enjoy it, buddy.
On a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday.
Wild West Guns and Guns.
What do we got coming up on Jaguars.com this week?
We're still sort of working out our pro day coverage. We'll have Jaguars.com live Wednesday. Not sure who the guest is, but we're getting ready for the draft. We're a lot of pre-draft coverage in the next few weeks, and I'll be debuting the Reader Mock sometime probably next week. So
ooh.
A lot to look forward to.
The Reader Mock. They get
chaos.
Their chance.
They do. And they take advantage of it.
Yes, they do. So Florida State, Florida, I know, have pro days coming up. You guys will have all that covered there on Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey back with us tomorrow here on Jaguars Today. It's been a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. I'll be back tonight with Big Country for Timeout from 7 to 9 here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Until then, we'll hand it over to the boys of XL Primetime. Enjoy your Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.